This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us is Victoria Jones, the chief Washington correspondent for the D.C. Radio Company. You can tweet her at Victoria Jones D.C. And Victoria, welcome back to the program. It's been a while.
Great to talk to you, Tom.
Great speaking with you. Originally, you know, back last week when we talked about getting you on the show, we were talking about, you know, Trump's trip to the UK and Theresa May and all this other kind of stuff. And then I was out of town. And, you know, so here we are today talking. In what has happened in the meantime is the indictments of these Russian intelligence officers. And, of course, the press conference this morning after the 2-hour, 10-minute meeting, private meeting with no other people in the room between Trump and Putin. And I'm curious, as you know, one of the more informed people in the news media, I respect your opinion tremendously, and you are such an astute observer, and you have the benefit of understanding of a bicultural understanding of this stuff and bicontinental understanding of these things. Before we get to Trump and Theresa May and all that stuff, I'm curious your thoughts on what happened this morning.
Yeah, well, I was pretty shocked this morning. My mouth fell more and more open, and I eventually shut it because I got worried about flies falling in. But we must get to Theresa May, more importantly, the Queen, because I'm
we will do that.
Shocked about that also. Well, it can be summed up rather well by going back to Prime Minister Tony Blair. Remember his spin doctor, who was very effective, Alistair Campbell, who got into quite a bit of trouble for his spinning. He tweeted this morning, "The last 10 minutes have been the highlight of Putin's KGB career."
Yeah, I think that's probably an accurate statement.
Yeah, that's from a spin doctor. Another tweet this morning from former CIA director John Brennan. "Donald Trump's press conference performance in Helsinki rises to and exceeds the threshold of high crimes and misdemeanors," Brennan said. "It was nothing short of treasonous. Not only were Trump's comments imbecilic, he is wholly in the pocket of Putin. Republican patriots, where are you? ?"
Yeah. Well, and it was directly asked of President Putin, "Do you have compromising information on Trump?" And he did not deny it. I've got the whole transcript right in front of me right here. And he says there were over 500, I skipped through it, but he says, "I didn't even know he was in Moscow. I treat him with the utmost respect, but back then he was a private individual. Nobody told me he was in Moscow. There were over 500 businessmen, high-ranking, high-level ones. I don't even remember the last names of each and every one of them. Look, do you think we tried to collect compromising information on each and every single one of them?" Well, as if, which is, by the way, an admission that they're collecting compromising information, I would think. And then he says, "Well, it's difficult to imagine an utter nonsense of a bigger scale than this. Please disregard these issues and don't think about this anymore." That's not a no.
Yeah, get this junk out of your head. Yeah, I mean, you know, he didn't deny it. And, you know, Trump said, "Well, if he had it, don't you think he would have got out by now?" Well, no, not if Putin didn't want it to get out, and if it was more valuable to him that it stayed in.
Right, that's the whole point of having it.
It exists.
You can't blackmail somebody if the information, I mean, the easiest way to short circuit somebody who's trying to blackmail you is to go public with the information. You know, it's just that simple.
Right.
Thank you for your thoughts on that.
I think what was really shocking to the press, and there's been some very interesting tweeting and reporting from reporters in the room, members of the White House press corps today,
right,
who apparently sat pretty stunned after the press conference, and very good questioning by the White House press corps, I thought, today.
Yeah, the
very
guy. Yeah, the fellow from Reuters, and I forget who the other one was.
Yeah, tougher than usual, actually, very tough, was that they were just stunned that President Trump really not only did not rise to the occasion, but almost appeared to be giving the Russia line and giving Putin's answers for him. And also, he didn't say what happened in the private meeting, but I thought this was very interesting. When asked about the Russian interference, not only did he go into an extraordinary rant about the Democrats, but he said one thing that was very interesting, which was that Putin was very interested, you know, had an interesting idea. And I immediately thought, well, this is what Putin does. He's a former KGB agent. He understands people. He knows their weaknesses and their vanities. He knows that Trump likes conspiracy theories. And so he's come up with one, possibly, and this is what he's told him during this meeting. And President Trump is interested in it, and it's an interesting idea. And they're off to the races. And, of course, Putin presenting Russia as an equal and suggesting that Mueller, he will have undermined Mueller throughout the meeting, agreeing with Trump about the witch hunt, now is suggesting that they have a joint investigation, which I suspect we may hear in days to come, President Trump sympathizing with.
Yeah, yeah, that shocked me rather too. So he went to, he started this thing out going to NATO, and then he went to the UK, if I'm remembering the sequence correctly. And in the UK, after dissing Theresa May, the prime minister, in the press, a story that leaked as he was having breakfast with her, as I recall, or lunch. And then he's walking in front of the Queen. I mean, how are the British reacting? What happened, and what do the British think of this?
Well, he didn't bow to the Queen, which was seen as a breach of protocol and rude. And then he walked in front of the Queen. And I think everybody's going, well, wasn't he briefed? And then they were also going, but why would you walk in front of a 92-year-old woman anyway?
Right.
I think that's what they were going, you know, that this was just astonishingly rude, and she couldn't get round him. And then, of course, the story came out in the Sunday Times yesterday, which is a very reliable newspaper, even though it's also Murdoch-owned. But it's a serious paper that Prince Charles and Prince William refused to meet with Trump.
Whoa, interesting.
Yeah.
So, broadly, do you think that we saw half a million or a million people turn out. You could tell me. I don't remember the number for the protesting Trump's inauguration, and then of course the next day I think it was well over a million people. The Women's March. And we had all these people out on the streets in the UK and in Scotland. Do they reflect the overwhelming sense of the British people, or merely the loud partisan, half or a small percentage, or you know what?
You know that there's a small percentage of people who like President Trump, but it's difficult to underestimate and to understate the dislike for President Trump and the astonishment with which the British say that why did Americans elect him? Because they have respect for Americans and they really like Americans. They genuinely don't understand, and they ask me this when I go over there or talk to them on the phone, we don't understand why you did this. Why did you do this?
Right.
Why? They don't get it.
Yeah, I was in Orlando last week, and there was a woman there from the UK. Actually, there are quite a few people there from the UK, but one woman in particular engaged me in conversation during one of the lunch breaks, and she was a wealthy, I'm assuming, from what I could see, a wealthy Brit, who said that it is now illegal in the UK to fly the Union Jack, to fly the flag of the United Kingdom, because it's racist. And I mean, it was this whole kind of screed about the nature and character of England is changing because of this merger with the European Union, and the European Union is bringing all these refugees in, and these refugees are now coming into the UK, and London doesn't look like London anymore, and blah-de-blah. And it sounded to me like a fairly racist rant. But it's also the exact same kind of rant that you're hearing from Trump supporters when they talk about those people from south of the border. And I'm curious, what kind of purchase does that have? That's the Boris Johnson world, isn't it?
There is purchase for that. England doesn't look like England anymore. Well, no, it doesn't look like England in the 1913. No, it doesn't look like England in 1913, or the year before the First World War broke out. It doesn't look like that. No, it doesn't, and it never will again. And the majority of Britons love that. They love its sort of polyglot quality.
Right.
But there are some people who yearn for it like it once was. But you know, that's a time when women couldn't vote. So
yeah. It's this bizarre notion that we're seeing on both sides of the Atlantic and frankly all over the world, that somehow the amount of pigment in your skin is going to determine your value system, and it seems to me so sad. It's just so wrong. Victoria Jones, Victoria, it's always great talking with you. Thank you for your insights and your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
And you can tweet Victoria at Victoria Jones DC. So, and Victoria, of course, she's the chief Washington correspondent for the DC radio company. We'll be back with more of the program and more of my thoughts on the spectacle we saw this morning right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this. And welcome back. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Well, I wanted to talk about, yes, I think Trump did commit treason, but I think this is deeper than Trump, and I don't know how we're going to handle this, because I think that if you look at this nomination of Kavanaugh, did Kennedy's son actually work as Trump's banker in Deutsche Bank and funnel the Russian money to Trump?
Right. We don't know. The simple answer right now is we don't know.
Yes, we don't know. And also the fact that the FBI is hinting that they knew that this was going on in August and September of 2016, all this hacking and interfering with the election, and they did nothing. They did not stand up and say anything.
Yeah, Strzok did not. The guy that they were trashing in front of Congress, he could have ended the Trump campaign with one leak. And instead, Comey killed the Clinton campaign with a press conference.
Yes. And so also, if the FBI knew, how much of Congress knew also and said nothing? And then if you have this group of people, the Federalist Society, handing Trump a list and saying, you will pick your judge from this, did they also hand him a list saying, you will pick your cabinet from this? And how much corruption?
Oh, we know that. I mean, the Heritage Foundation was very, and other groups were involved in advising Trump on cabinet picks. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that was right out in the open.
So how many of these oligarchs, these one percenters, the rich people who have international businesses, also do business with Russia? And how many of them? They said that they were going after seven companies in their indictments. So which seven are they? And how much of an influence have they had in taking over our government?
Yeah.
And I think, yes, you're correct. This was a coup.
Yeah, that I suspect is a minor consideration, Norma. Consider that the entire GDP of Russia is less than the state of Texas. And most of Russia's income is the consequence of, selling fossil fuels. So,
yeah.
The business interest part of it, I think Trump, in fact, we know he was desperately trying to get a Trump hotel in Moscow, and probably is continuing to, and that's probably what he wanted to talk about to Putin. But
yes, I think that we really need to keep an eye on Congress for the next month to see how they handle this. What are they going to do? Are they going to just be complicit in this? Are they going to continue to commit in what in my mind is also treason? And how are we going to handle it? Should the election have been stopped? Should we now have someone come in and be president while all these trials go on? And we have no laws to cover this.
We have no mechanism for it. The only mechanism, in my understanding, and I've not seen or heard anything that contradicts this, the only mechanism that could be used is the mechanism of impeachment, and you could go after, and particularly if there's a Democratic Speaker of the House who would become president if both the president and vice president were impeached, then you could essentially reverse the election by impeaching both Donald Trump and Mike Pence after the elections if the Democrats take the House and take two-thirds of the Senate. It's extremely unlikely, but it's not impossible. So that's all I know. Norma, thank you for the call. It's always nice to hear from you. I appreciate it. We'll be back. It's the Tom Hartman Program here. Stick around. We'll be back with more of your calls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to make a point that I made in the first hour. I want to make it all over again in perhaps slightly different words because I want to be so absolutely clear about this, what's going on here. And I'm not talking about what's going on here with, you know, did Trump commit treason this morning? Yes, I believe he did. Has he operated contrary to American interests? Yes, he has. What's the solution for this? If enough Democrats show up and enough, frankly, you know, people are defecting from the Republican Party in droves, and independents are going, you know, obviously I'm not going to vote for a Republican. If enough people show up and vote in the next election and double check and make sure that Kris Kobach, Donald Trump, and Mike Pence have not removed, and their buddies have not removed your name from the voting rolls, because they have pulled millions of names off voting rolls over the last few years. Make sure that you're still registered to vote. And if you're in a state with all these ID requirements, 16 ways to Sunday, find out what those requirements are so that when you show up to vote, you can actually cast a real ballot, not a provisional ballot. But if that were to happen, and Democrats took control of the House and 2/3 of the Senate, and they brought articles of impeachment, not against Donald Trump, but against Donald Trump and Mike Pence together, and convicted them in the Senate and removed from them from office, then the Speaker of the House, who would be a Democrat, would become president, and you would have effectively reversed the 2016 election. That's the only mechanism I can think of to make it happen. So back to the rant I wanted to lay on you, my thoughts on this stuff. Brett McDonald tweets to me, he says, sorry, Tom, no, you're not a tool, but if you think for 1 minute the Koch brothers have the best interest of the American people, you're wrong. Koch brother policies are every bit as harmful to the people as Russia. This is what Brent said to me. And I understand what you're saying. And I think that the policies of the Kochs and some of these other billionaires, in my opinion, are extremely destructive to my country as I understand it and its values as I understand them. But you have to understand, there is a difference between what billionaire businessmen and women, I suppose, Betsy DeVos is passing out money to these groups and supporting things, you know, like the Mackinac Group and whatnot. There's a difference between American billionaires messing in our elections and foreign countries messing in our elections. And I think it's important for us to distinguish between the two. I think that we should have laws that prevent the undue influence of large money. This is basically what Franklin Roosevelt fought his entire presidency, and by the way, defeated. But you have to understand how these guys are thinking and where they're thinking. Back in 1951 or 52, Russell Kirk published this book called The Conservative Mind, and he laid out this argument. The book is still in print. You can buy it and read it. And it wasn't just him. I mean, there was a whole bunch of people who were writing for a lot of conservative publications that were making this argument, that if the middle class continued to grow as a result of widespread unionization, a time would come when the middle class was strong enough and politically active enough that they would start voting to take money away from rich people and give it to themselves, number one. In fact, this had already happened in the 1930s. It was called Social Security. And number two, and the WPA and the CCC and all those other, quote, socialist programs. So that would happen. And number two, you would see moral order break down in the United States and we would devolve into chaos. And sure enough, in the 1960s, when young people came out in the streets in hordes, in by the millions, and said no to the Vietnam War, after the introduction of the birth control pill, the legalization of it in 1961, the sexual revolution, The women becoming politically active and active in corporate boardrooms, When these guys, these conservatives, saw this happening, they thought, oh my God, Russell Kirk was right. This is chaos. This is the end of America as we know it. And by the way, it was in some ways. And that's when they decided to fight back. That's a different thing than a foreign country messing in your elections.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It is, in my opinion, a terrible thing for billionaires to, you know, basically be, you know, funding the destruction of American values, but it's a different thing. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Rich in Greenwood, Indiana. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much. You've just been doing an A-plus amazing show.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring people's attention back to the information disclosure that I know as the 22nd of March, 2017, when I heard on BBC The World a statement by Evan McMullen, who was a candidate in the 2016 election.
And a former CIA officer.
That's right. Better for America was his slogan. And he came in on the 8th of August. He said that it was well known in the Republican Party that there was something going on between the Trump campaign and the Russians. And he said that there was a conversation. And then, all of a sudden, it turned out that that conversation had a recording. And it was California Representative Kevin McCarthy, Republican, who said in a group meeting, Putin pays two people in our ranks. He gives money to Representative Dana Rohrabacher, and he's paying the Trump campaign. And then there's laughter, and he says, no, no, swear to God. And then Paul Ryan breaks in and says, okay, if this is true, then it does not leave this conversation. This is how we know we're a family.
Right.
That's the Malik Manual. That's the 1972 instructions out of the Nixon White House by Fred Malik that I brought forward before. Nothing in writing, head-to-head communications, mafia-level loyalty.
Yeah.
Okay, to continue. Would you please fill in where, after Paul Ryan says, we're not going to talk about this, then in public, Mitch McConnell refuses to call foul when information is brought forward that there's shenanigans going on, and President Obama said to Putin, cut it out. Pedal back for me and give that... That further information about the complicity of Mitch McConnell, because what I'm trying to point to here is everybody in the Republican Party is filthy, filthy dirty. And the only thing that is up above the waves that is the hood ornament on this this perverse vehicle of our country is the hood ornament of Donald Trump. That's
Rich, if we don't, but, you know, by your standards and mine, I completely agree, and you're absolutely right. You know, the Republicans are dirty. But if we fail to understand where these people are coming from, how they're thinking, what their worldview is, we will not succeed in defeating them politically. And okay. Mitch McConnell is reflecting the interests of the billionaire class. He's a wholly owned subsidiary of probably... you know, 20 or 30 billionaires in the United States and maybe a few hundred multimillionaires and the corporations that participate with them that pay these guys off. And it's not just Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, same thing. And some of these guys are just paid off toadies. But I think that the ones that really rise to high levels of powers, the Paul Ryans, the Mitch McConnells, the ones who get elected to the United States Senate, I think they actually believe that having a liberal democracy, a social democracy, having a country where everybody has health care, where people can go to college for free, destroys personal incentive, encourages lawlessness, encourages immorality, which they would define as everything from homosexuality to out of wedlock sex. And therefore, in their mind, this is the financial political Republican version of the of the, what's the phrase that the evangelicals use for a lie that it's told for a good purpose? The noble lie, thank you. Of the noble lie. Basically, you know, the evangelicals are all behind Trump, not because they think he's a Christian. They know he's not, you know, or even a good man. They know he's not. They're behind him because he's going to keep their churches tax exempt and give them political power. It's just that simple. And so you've got the noble lie happening on the Christian side, and on the Republican side, by and large, you've got another noble lie, which is these guys. You know, they've for years and years and years accused liberals of being pointy-headed, ivory tower intellectuals who think they know what's best for everybody, right? They're saying that because they're projecting. That's exactly what they are. They believe that they know the best way to run a country is to run it like a company, that the president should essentially be an autocrat, that he should surround himself with yes men, that things get done more efficiently and get done better that way, that it's better for American business. And as Herbert Hoover's Secretary of the Treasury said, or Commerce said back in the day, you know, what's good for General Motors is good for America, that what's good for business is good for America. I think that, you know, and if we don't understand that there are not only true believers at those high levels and that they are willing I believe this is the philosophy that animates Rupert Murdoch and Fox News. They're telling lies to the American people, and they know they're telling lies to American people. They're not necessarily lies of commission, where they say something that's totally false, although that happens. They're mostly lies of deletion, distortion, and generalization. Yep. The three NLP tools, by the way, that we all use all the time to make sense of the world around us. They delete important pieces of information, so they cause people to believe things that may not be true. They distort the actual information that's out there, and they generalize things massively. And as a consequence of this, they've convinced the average Joe in Michigan or in Indiana that voting Republican is somehow in their interest, when it's really not. But the noble lie, that's the noble lie that they're telling to the workers, just like the Tony Perkinses of the world, you know, are telling their noble lie to their religious fight. And the Ralph Reeds and the Jerry Falwell Juniors are telling that noble lie, as it were, to their followers. Am I making sense, Rich?
Absolutely. And I want you to please finish the idea with them being our Achilles heel of our liberty and freedom, because this is the Gerasimov doctrine as practiced by the FSB on our political structure.
Well, and not just the FSB. This is something that has happened in pretty much every country that has become an autocracy, that has moved from democracy to autocracy. And it happens slightly differently in every country, but there are some massive commonalities. And trashing the media, by the way, is one of the very first steps. Whether it is Duterte in the Philippines, literally killing reporters after turning his country against the media, whether it's Erdogan in Turkey killing and imprisoning reporters, whether it's Pinochet in Chile, who's obviously no longer around, but he was one of the first experiments. It was that was run by the Chicago School. Milton Friedman went down there and made that happen. So this is nothing new. Now they're doing it to us.
Remember, we got targeted super fast after the Magnitsky Act,
right?
Because we had this guy from Russia, Vladimir Karamurza, who's been poisoned twice. He has survived two poisonings. And he came to the country and our country, and he gave testimony on Capitol Hill, and he said, please help me get the Magnitsky Act into international business and banking laws so that we can challenge the legitimacy of these oligarchs' hold on their ill-gotten gains. And Putin is losing his mind.
Well, I don't think he's losing his mind right now. I think he's probably having a toast with his good buddies with some good Russian vodka. But I absolutely get what you're saying, Rich.
Right on.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Devon in Washington, D.C. Hey, Devon, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, this may be a little on the radical end, but if this happened in any other country, there's a reason that dictators don't leave, because they're going to get locked up when they get back. This is insane. And
this has happened in a bunch of other countries. Devon, if I may interrupt very briefly, this is what happened in Turkey. This is what happened in the Philippines. And I fear where I think you're going, which is that, you know, Trump may end up declaring a state of emergency, or some, you know, something might happen, or we might get attacked, in quotes. And God only knows, you know, how long, you know, I'm afraid to go down that road in my, you know, I go down it in my thinking, Devon, and it scares the hell out of me. Back to you.
Actually, I wasn't going there, Tom.
Okay.
I was thinking that if we could all just get it together and arrest him at the airport, not let him back into the White House, because it is so clear that he is a traitor to our nation. And right now, they should be drawing up articles of impeachment. But at the very least, we need to stop him. Not in, you know,
you
not
can't
in the next
you can't
election,
do it physically, Devon. You can't stop Donald Trump at the airport. First of all, he doesn't go through airports. He's going to go through military bases.
Oh, right.
But secondly, you know, trying to do anything physical is inviting your own death or imprisonment. It's not the appropriate way. It's not the American way. I need to say this again. I think this is so important. If enough people of goodwill, if enough patriots, whether they call themselves Republicans, Independents, Democrats, Greens, Libertarians, I don't care. If enough patriots show up at the polls to overwhelm the voter suppression that's going on, to overwhelm the deletion of voters from the rolls that's going on, to overwhelm the redshift bias of voting no paper voting machines in states like Georgia. If enough people show up at the polls that over 50% of the House of Representatives is Democrats and over 2/3 of the Senate is Democrats, then we impeach both Trump and Pence, then the Speaker of the House, a Democrat, becomes President of the United States, and you've reversed the 2016 election.
I agree.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Devon. We've got some work to do here. We've got some work. I don't see any other way to do it. And this is what Mark Pocan was talking about last Thursday. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I should clarify, Pocan wasn't saying we'll impeach both of them and, you know, we'll make the Speaker the President. I'm saying that. But he was saying it's got to be done at the ballot box. That's the only mechanism we have. And welcome back. And let's see here. Elizabeth in got to push the right button. Is it Elizabeth or Elizabeth in Woodville, Ohio?
Elizabeth in Brookville, Ohio.
Brookville. I'm sorry, Elizabeth. What's up?
Oh, Tom, I'm so glad. I was thinking like the other woman. Thank you for calming us down. But I believe in my heart that now it is a time for action. It's obvious that the Justice Department acted ahead of them by giving this presentation regarding the 12 indictments, because what it did is allow people to actually see where they were coming from. See, I think that now most Americans should have a better view of what Russia did and how they did it,
right,
and how the president responds to it. He is a treason, and short of meeting him at the airport and having him arrested, I think that we need to formulate a PAPS movement, Patriots Against Putin, and that we should contact our Congress people and encourage them to start meeting, you know, with community organizations and educating them on how to move forward and entertain other groups of people in various states and then communities and get the job done to get this man out of office.
Yeah, but let's, my one concern and one of the reasons why over the years I have gently pushed back on people who want to pin this whole thing on Russia is that it's not just Putin. Putin isn't the guy who knocked 150,000 people off the voting rolls in Wisconsin just before the election where Trump won by a small margin. Putin isn't the guy who ran the voting machines in Michigan where 80,000 people voted, stood in line in Detroit for hours and hours and hours, mostly African Americans, and somehow there was no vote for president registered, and then Trump won that state by 10,000 votes. Putin wasn't the guy who did the, well, you know, who we don't know, actually. The Russians might have hacked the voting machines. But by and large, much of this stuff is not Putin. And if we don't realize that there is a large systemic aggressive campaign by people who call themselves conservatives but are really corporatists. They believe not in democracy but in oligarchy. They believe in plutocracy. They believe in rule by the rich, rule by the corporations, what Mussolini called fascism. If we don't keep in mind that that is going on at the same time and, frankly, more powerfully and more aggressively, you know, then we could get Putin's completely out of the sphere of American influence, ban the all Russian posts from Facebook, totally lock up our voting rolls, and we would still have a problem with plutocrats and autocrats trying to run our country, or actually running our country. Am I making sense?
I agree with you, but I believe that if we Americans, some of us, have a problem looking at ourselves.
Yes.
And if you direct it somewhere else or someone else, which seems to be the direction that they take in dividing us, and which is very dangerous because, as our fourth president once said, that a country divided cannot stand.
Amen. Amen. And that's this is part of it. I mean, what Trump has done with these children from the border, what Trump has done, just right across the board. All these things should be part of the articles of impeachment. Thank you. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. And Loving What You Do, Ellen Ratner's new book. On the line with us, Talk Media News' chief foreign correspondent, live from Helsinki, Luke Vargas. You can follow him on Twitter at The Courier. Luke, what's up?
Well, I think you can probably guess.
Yeah. I'd like your take I watched the press conference. We've been talking about it for 2 hours here. But what's your take on it?
Well, I mean, I most of the specifics. There are a few things I'll highlight.
Luke, your phone is just totally breaking up. Is Skype is better? Can we take a Skype audio? Let's try that. Start over, Luke.
Okay. Let me say this.
Lies in transcript form.
We'll go back
to
the phone.
Just a folly.
Okay. Luke, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to let this go because your Skype just disconnected and we were trying to use your Skype audio and I can't hear your phone. We'll have to, maybe we can get you in the next hour. Give us a call back. I'm very sorry. It just is not working. Back to our telephone lines. George in Chicago. Hey George, thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's on your mind?
And thank you, Tom, for you and your staff and all you do. You're a beacon in the midst of all this darkness.
Thank you, George.
Quite simply, I'd like to say this. In 2006, when the Democrats regained control of the House, Nancy Pelosi sadly said that impeachment was off the table, and thus we, the people, were robbed of any chance to learn of the total essence of the high crimes and misdemeanors of the Bush-Cheney administration. That can't happen now.
Yeah, I'm with you. George, I completely agree with you. And feel free to call back again later on in the week because I'm going to cut you short here because we just got Luke back on from Helsinki. My apologies, George, but I'm with you. Give us a shout back and we can continue the conversation. Luke, can we try it again?
Hey, Tom, I think this is working. It's
great.
The White House Wi-Fi network is inundated right now.
I can imagine.
We're going over to Finnish 4G.
Okay.
Seems to be decent.
So back to the beginning.
I was saying, I think it's a folly to try and analyze President Trump in transcript form, and yet there are benefits to looking at what President Trump's prepared remarks were. Because we knew in advance of this, we were not going to get a redo of the Singapore press conference, which was freewheeling. It was, 30 questions and an hour and a half. We were told this was going to be two questions from each side, and I think it's safe to assume the questions from the Russian side of the aisle were probably not going to be terribly dangerous for President Trump or Putin to answer, for that matter. And to think that, let's say, the questions from the U.S. press had not been so dogged, and I do think Reuters and AP's correspondents here deserve credit for trying to elbow as much room for themselves in this press conference as possible.
I agree.
The opening statement from President Trump would have been all that we were left with. And going through that, I take particular note of the fact that Ukraine was never mentioned once. It is a territorial aggression that the Senate and the House think is unacceptable. It is the basis for a lot of other U.S. foreign policy regarding sanctions and other things, and is viewed as unacceptable to many of our allies. That was not going to get brought up at all had reporters not asked about it. I think that's quite telling. Mm-hmm. And I will point out also that the issue of the attack on the American election, alleged attack by Russia on the American election, was only given a line. And the line was from President Trump: during today's meeting, I addressed directly with the president the issue of Russian interference in our election. That was it. He then said, look, I spent a lot of time talking about it. And Putin, this is a quote that I think really shows that these guys were setting each other up. This wasn't as if we were hearing two presidents from two different nations. This really seemed to me people who, you know, two men who's figured out how to support each other's positions. And Trump says, quote, President Putin may well want to address it, and very strongly, because he feels very strongly about it. And he has an interesting idea, as if to say, look, he's given me an alibi. I think it's a good alibi. Let him give it. That, to me, again, would have been all that we would have gotten from President Trump.
I agree.
On this paramount issue.
I think Trump thinks that Putin helped him win the election, and he doesn't want anybody else to think that. But I think that deep down inside, he thinks that. And, you know, so maybe the conversation was, hey, thanks, Vlad. Anyhow.
Exactly. I guess I had also sort of been predicting that one thing we might see from Putin in particular would be sort of setting President Trump up for an easy success, that Trump, feeling uncomfortable by the indictments last week, would have sort of been reaching for some sort of big deliverable, as we'd say. And my prediction is you'd have these two sides agree to resume the New START treaty nuclear drawdown process. And we didn't get that. I mean, instead, the only sort of promises here that they're going to meet more. Trump says the relationship is better. We've turned a new chapter, that, you know, businessmen from the two countries are going to meet. But besides that, it was really...
I thought Putin mentioned the START talks in his prepared remarks.
I believe he mentioned the fact that he was complaining about the deployment of U.S. missile systems to parts of Europe that were not. And that's actually quite the opposite, right? It's a dig at the United States, not an appeal for more cooperation. So we don't really leave here with much in hand.
I look forward to actually reading both those transcripts later on today with a slightly clearer head, as it were, you know, rather than just all the vibrancy of the
blur, I will say.
There you go. Luke Vargas, you can follow him on Twitter at The Courier. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.